This is the EWN Radio Network.
This is Close Up with Phyllis Smith.
And welcome to Close Up. I am Phyllis Smith. And we've got such a great show today, and I say that all the time, but this one is particularly interesting because it's a whole new take on leadership. So how does one become a leader? Are people born leaders? Well, the truth is that leaders evolve. According to an extensive study featured in a new book called Pivot Points, Five Decisions Every Successful Leader Must Make, leadership is about when and how you make decisions. And the author of Pivot Points, Julia Tang Peters, she joins us today to talk specifically about what those pivotal points are and how and why they're so important into creating and making an effective leader. So thank you, Julia, for joining us today.
Thank you, Phyllis, for having me on.
So, first of all, you know, what I found, you know, you can go on the internet and find out anything. So I thought, I put up dictionary.com and said, what is the definition of leadership? And what I found is it's a person who guides or directs a group. Okay, so that's really simple. But you say it's a lot more complicated than that. In your book, you say leading is a purposeful decision for making oneself accountable for fulfilling a worthy idea that requires out of the ordinary responsibility. So can you explain what you mean by that?
Yes. Well, you know, people can be very influential and have power to get a lot of things done and make an impact. And sometimes that impact is not really for the greater good. It doesn't really help anybody but that individual. And my definition of leadership, I have to say, I crafted that very specifically when I was starting to write the book, and that was at the depths of the Great Recession. And if you recall, at that time, leadership, we had a crisis in leadership. All the headlines were about where have our leaders gone, and the people who, according to the traditional definition of leadership, directs and leads a group of people, you know, a lot of them were the fallen, the greedy, the disgraced, sometimes the convicted, right? And so that was a primary driver of why I decided to write this book when I did, that we need a different look at leadership. And I am a executive coach and leadership consultant, and I know that there are millions of people, and many of them are your audience, your listeners, who want to be better leaders. And yet, so many of the people who have been in the press for having that position and title as a leader have really, you know, one has to wonder, why would anyone want to be that? You know, and I thought we need to restore the real meaning of leadership, which is really someone who, yes, directs and leads a group of people, but specifically towards making something important happen. And that something important serves a purpose, a greater good beyond the goals of an individual. The individual wants for success and wealth, and that it really serves a larger purpose, and you're having that kind of impact on people.
And in fact, you even say that good leadership or good leaders follow the definition of the the Hippocratic Oath: do no harm.
Yes. Because, you know, there have been articles written about how, and in terms of the traditional look at leadership, the skills, the impact one had, the power one has, you know, people have said, well, you know, it's, in some cases, the large, the leaders of the large drug rings, they're leaders.
Right.
you know. And if you look strictly at the skills, organizing skills, the skills that influence and power, that would be true. So that's why I say we really need to take another look at how we define leadership and use the word accurately. That, you know, I believe that when you're talking about the people who head up large drug organizations, let's call them the heads of large drug organizations, not leaders. When we talk about political leaders who are authoritarian and there's a lot of abuse, let's call them dictators, not leaders. Okay, and one thing I find annoying in the workplace is that so often people talk about their bosses or the senior executives of their companies as weak leaders.
Yeah.
Well, I would like to for us to not talk about weak leaders and be able to talk about a leader is a leader. A weak leader is sort of an oxymoron. That person is an executive, maybe, with a title, but not very effective. So that person may be executive, who has an executive title, but is not a leader. So I use the word leader in a very specific way. And Pivot Points, the book, talks about leadership in this way, and the leaders featured in the book were carefully selected.
And you also talk about that, say that there are two essential elements that make up a good leader, and that is accountability and ingenuity. So explain what you mean by that.
Okay, accountability mainly means holding yourself accountable for making something important happen, and that something important I define as ingenuity. The opposite of ingenuity is the status quo. That by definition, leaders lead people to do something that is different from the status quo. Okay, here again, I have very, very specific definitions. This is where I differentiate leaders from managers. Managers can hold themselves accountable very diligently, but they deal with the realm of the status quo, things as they are. Now, that's very important work. Managing is very important work for every business. You know, you have to keep the trains running on time. You have to keep the trains clean so that people want to get on the train, etc. But the work of leading is different from the work of managing, and that is something that's so important that is so often overlooked. In so many companies, there is this fallacy in thinking that an excellent manager is a good leader. And I say an excellent manager is an excellent manager. That a leader looks into the future, a leader really tries to understand a problem and understands that if you keep doing the things the way you've been doing it, that's what led to the problem to begin with. You have to do it differently to solve the problem.
Right. You mentioned also that there are four quadrants, manager being one of them in a business. Explain what you mean by that. What are those four quadrants and why they're important?
Okay, so we just said that I define leadership mainly in terms of these two attributes, and that is accountability and ingenuity. So if you picture that forms an axis, the vertical line is accountability, top is highly accountable, and bottom is low accountability. And the horizontal axis is ingenuity. The right end is strong ingenuity, and the opposite end is the status quo. So then you have four quadrants, and the high accountability, strong ingenuity would be the leader. Leaders operate in that quadrant. Decisions they make have ingenious solutions as well as visions, ideas, and they hold themselves accountable to make those happen. Highly accountable, but realm of status quo, those are the managers. Important work, as I said. However, important also to recognize that what differentiates a leader from a manager is that ingenuity component, innovative, creative ideas for problem solving and for future direction. Status quo and not even very accountable, I call those the clock punchers.
Uh-huh.
Now, I think, I don't know, Phyllis, have you ever worked with a clock puncher?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm in at this time, I'm out at this time, I take my lunch at this time, and that's it. And
exactly.
They come back the next
and
day
and
do the same thing.
And that's not my job, I can't help you, yeah.
Right, uh-huh.
Exactly. Okay, they do just enough to keep their job. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and then low accountability, but have strong ideas. I call those the wanderers. Now, I know that at certain times in my career, I've been a wanderer. Okay, I have ideas, and I don't make them happen. You know, and ideas just pop into my mind, and I think, oh, that's a neat idea. Maybe I'll do that one day, but I never do anything about it. The important thing is for the wanderer at certain phases with certain ideas for you to say, that really makes me excited. We need that. I am making a commitment to make that happen. And so you go from being a wanderer with ideas to holding yourself accountable for making it happen and become a leader. Okay, and I find in my work with organizations that a very common hiring mistake at the senior level especially is hiring wanderers. Because wanderers can interview really well and because they have good ideas and they can talk passionately about those ideas. And especially these days, many companies really need to bring in people with fresh ideas, new thinking. So they think, oh, great, we need this person. Hire this person, and a couple of years later, everyone's looking around saying, wait, but nothing happened.
Let me jump in here. What mm-hmm. about, though, would it be a good leader who would look at that wanderer, say, hey, you've got that idea. I'm holding you accountable for it. I want a plan on my desk by, you know, in 2 weeks. In other words, can a leader make that help turn that wanderer into a leader?
Great point, Phyllis, and that is the point about this matrix, these quadrants. A leader's responsibility first is to understand where people are and then say, you know, let me try to move people around these quadrants. So move a wanderer into the leader quadrant. But you probably, for a wanderer, need to first try to move that wanderer into the manager quadrant in terms of understanding process, okay, and how to make something happen. In many ways, the how needs to work with the status quo of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
The what is the innovative thought, the innovative idea. But especially in large companies, the how, you still need to understand the status quo of the organization, how things get done. Okay, and so a leader might say, you know, this person has really great ideas and has the passion, but this person needs to understand that just having the idea isn't enough. She or he also needs to turn it into reality. And let me hold this person accountable, you know, and work with this person. You know, give me an action plan in a week.
Right.
you know, and then do the follow-up and make sure the person is following up on the action plan in terms of holding self accountable. Now, you know, leaders always reach a point where they quickly actually realize that they can't do it alone. They need others.
Right.
And one of my definitions of leadership is believing in the power of one and understanding the magic of many.
That
one
that.
Person can get something started. It takes one person to get something started. But then it needs to become a movement. And to get a movement is the magic of many. You want many people to participate, be engaged, feel they are empowered, and they are part of making it happen. And that's where the significant happenings occur.
Julia, I got to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more, start getting into what these decisions are, what makes a pivotal decision, and then later on, we're going to talk about what those five pivotal points, decision-making points are to help create great leaders. So stand by. We'll come right back after this short break.
Hi, I'm Janelle McCauley, the host of Eat Great, Live Well Radio, right here on the EWN Radio Network. Join me every Thursday to find out how you can take control of your health and your life. No complicated medical speak, just straight talk about eating healthier without giving up the foods you love. Each week, I'll bring you powerful and revealing interviews with doctors, health experts, and people just like you who have learned to create a healthy future for themselves and the ones they love. I look forward to serving you great content and healthy tips on Eat Great, Live Well Radio. And remember, if you can't listen to me live, you can always get the replay at EWNRadioNetwork.com. I invite you to join me each Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, here on the EWN Radio Network, and let's create your healthy future together.
Hi, we're back again, and yes, this is EWN Radio, and I'm speaking with, I'm Phyllis Smith, and I'm speaking with Julia Tang Peters. She's written a book called Pivot Points, Five Decisions Every Successful Leader Must Make. So we've been talking about really kind of an overall definitions. I would say there's kind of plural definitions of leadership, but mostly I think it's important in that, you know, Julia, you say a leader always strives for positive results, benefiting more than themselves. So leaders are not just about themselves and making themselves happy and bumping them up to a higher stature, but they are about creating a business, an environment, and helping others in grow and become leaders. So I think one of the things I want to talk to you about is when you're describing the different ways you describe leadership is really, it feels very much like the definition or the characteristics we hear about entrepreneurs, that an entrepreneur is an innovator, they're a forward thinker, they're creative. That's some of the terms you use to describe a leader. And really, you say in your book that the days of somebody having a job for 35 years and the same job for 35 years in retirement is pretty much long gone. That we are now inundated, in a sense, with entrepreneurship, that there are more and more of them. And eWomen Network, which is the parent company for EWN Radio, that's what we do. We support, we are a complete success system for women entrepreneurs. That's what we do. So explain that connection there between leadership and entrepreneurship.
Well, entrepreneurs are actually, I think, the best leaders, okay, because an entrepreneur certainly realizes that it's all up to me.
No.
I am the leader. I am the boss. I make the decisions. And to want to do that says that all of your audience who are entrepreneurs, they've made the decision to say, yes, I want to be a leader. I want to be a leader of, first of all, my career, of my destiny. I want to be a leader of my life, and I want to be a leader of a business. Now, for entrepreneurs, I think a key question, there is no right answer here, but a key question entrepreneurs need to ask themselves, and this involves some soul searching, would be, what is your purpose in being an entrepreneur?
Mm.
Now, some people want to be an entrepreneur because they want that lifestyle. They want the flexibility, especially for women who need that flexibility if they have children at home and, you know, they're in a family life stage. They need that. And that's fine, okay? But you need to be honest with yourself. What's your purpose? Or are you an entrepreneur because you really want to build a company? You want to build something of value, and you want it to be sustainable. And hopefully even sustainable beyond you, so that you are not only building a business, a company, but you are, as you just mentioned, creating other leaders. You are developing mm-hmm. other leaders. Okay, you're building a culture of leadership for sustainability.
Mm.
And or are you building something where, and this you know, happens a lot today with technology, of course, you're building something to sell, you know, and you mm-hmm. can sell it in 2 years. Or you want to actually build it, create that value yourself and sell it later. But so, you know, that I think is the first answer that mm-hmm. lead entrepreneurs need to come up with for themselves, and then that determines everything else.
Right. Now, and not everybody is just becomes an entrepreneur / leader. So the important thing is that you also say it's a journey, and in that journey, there are these five pivotal decisions that you discovered in doing research for your book, Pivot Points. So what are, in a nutshell, let's just run through those five pivotal decisions that every leader should make to become successful. And then how did you derive those five decisions? How did you come up with that?
Okay, well, let me just cover what those five are first. And the first one is the launching decision. That is the decision to make a commitment to develop mastery of a skill set. Okay, this is what I want to become an expert at.
Mm-hmm.
Then next is the turning point decision. And I found that when you develop mastery in a skill set, inevitably along the way, you recognize there's a problem, a condition that needs to be solved that could really improve the way things are done. Okay, so that I call the turning point decision, to tackle that improvement needed. Next comes the tipping point decision. After a few more years of working at that turning point decision, I found that people recognize a fundamental barrier exists, and if you can break through that barrier, you can take your own leadership as well as the business to the next level. That fundamental barrier can be internal or it can be external. Internal, it could be, oh, I've never taken that big a risk before, you know, and am I going to break through that barrier and say I'm going to do it? Or it could be an external barrier. A common one, of course, would be the business cycle, the economic cycle. Economic downturn. And then the tipping point decision, you know, the business takes off and reaches a tipping point, and this is the one I find most fascinating. The next pivot point is a recommitment decision that I found that executives, after 20, 25 years at something, even when they're at the peak of their tipping point success, still reach a point of questioning, do I recommit to doing this? Is there more for me to do here? Or is there, I've done everything I can here or want to, and there's something else I've always wanted to do? So recommitment decision, I define it as ultimately a recommitment to self, whether it's staying, continuing with what you're doing, but moving the goalposts out further because there's more for you to do, or it's I've done all I can or want here, and there's something else I want to do that I can make an impact. Mm-hmm. And then inevitably, we all have to face the letting go decision. Now, you know, along the way, sometimes, you know, there may be other letting goes, but there is always a final letting go.
And
that is a decision that's very strategic. When is time to let go? And when is time to let go as a leadership decision also means that you have planned for your succession. You have identified your successor. You are grooming your successor. You are trying to set up your successor for success and to be able to carry on from a position of strength after you have left the business. Okay, so those are the five pivot points. I got to these through in-depth interviews with industry-changing leaders, really great leaders, who are featured in my book. I did not set out with this thesis about these five pivot points. I set out simply, as I mentioned, you know, during the Great Recession, people were wondering, you know, if to be a CEO means that you have to lose your values, you have to do things that you end up maybe not wanting to do, but you had to do, and, you know, you become, you know, get all these problems. You know, who will want to be a leader? Who will want to be a CEO? So I set out just simply to interview great leaders who have over decades changed their industries as well as been, have strong reputations, trustworthy leaders, just to find out how they did what they did and maintain their values and integrity through it all. After in-depth interviews, and these leaders were tremendous in sharing their stories, I had about 20 hours of interview time with each of them.
How many were there?
Five.
And can you just tell us who some of them are?
Well, there are five different industries, so that's, and I consciously wanted that. John Rogers is founder of Ariel Investments, an institutional money management firm. And Glenn Tolman is healthcare solutions technology person, CEO and founder. And Al Golan is one of the 100 most respected public relations people of the 20th century. PR Week named him that. And Dale Dawson was an investment banker who then left investment banking because he lost his passion for it and started, to his own surprise, started a nonprofit and is totally passionate and committed to that. The nonprofit work, and Bud Frankel, who created the marketing services agents industry. So five leaders in five different industries who truly changed their industries. So I interviewed each of them in depth, and five totally different personalities. They were all entrepreneurs. But there was this pattern of these pivot points and decisions they made at these pivot points, some of which were crises, decisions they made that had the impacts, which I just explained, you know, the turning point, the tipping point, the recommitment. Now, with that said, and that their leadership journey are confronting, facing these pivot point challenges and then making the decisions which took, and sometimes, you know, in the midst of potentially catastrophic crises, took their businesses to the next level, but also took their own leadership to another level through all the learning and growth they had to experience to implement the decisions they made.
Yeah.
Now, with that said, so that's a leadership arc. It's in that leader quadrant that we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
With that said, my next book is Pivot Points for Women. Women leaders, pivot points and the decisions, pivotal decisions, are as valid for women as for men. Because after the in-depth interviews and finding this pattern of pivot points and their journeys, I did a quantitative survey study that included men and women of college-educated people in professional careers, many of which were entrepreneurs. And the thing is, for women, it's easier for men to have a linear career arc than it is for women. And so, my next book is specifically for and about women. That for women, this, it's the same challenges and decisions that need to be made. However, it's more like a jungle gym for women.
Interesting. And I'm going to stop you there because we're going to take a short break. When we come back, you'll tell us what that jungle gym is, and then we'll get more into what the characteristics are of a pivotal decision. So stand by after this break.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. One of my mottos for business owners is, you can't do it alone. Whether you're in the startup stage of your business or you're scaling, you can't grow without relationships to provide support, wisdom, and new customers. eWomen Network is your home to connect with other women entrepreneurs who have been where you are or are experiencing the same challenges. We have chapters across the U.S. and Canada that have monthly events featuring our trademarked process called accelerated networking to ensure you get the contacts, resources, and leads you need to grow your business. And once you become a member, you get many benefits, including 2 one-on-one coaching sessions, unlimited access to our membership database, your own personal profile page, and discounts on products and services with our business partners such as UPS and American Express Open. Join the eWomen Network community and let us help you live your dream. For details, visit eWomenNetwork.com.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
This is Close Up with your host, Phyllis Smith.
And welcome back. Yeah, this is Phyllis Smith. I'm speaking with Julia Chang Peters. And Julia has written a book called Pivot Points, 5 Decisions Every Successful Leader Must Make. And so we were just talking about that. Julia's book, she interviewed at length 5 male leaders for this book, but she's also embarking on another book about women leaders. And Julia, you just said that women, men sort of follow a linear pattern with their career and their leadership, in their leadership career, and women tend to kind of do this jungle gym thing. So
yeah.
What do you mean by that, and why is it different for men and women?
Okay, well, certainly the reality is the same for men and women, in that the reality is, along this journey, especially when you are in my target market, are high achievers, and your audience are high achievers, right?
Right.
That the reality is there are always competing priorities, and especially for entrepreneurs, because you know you're it. There are always competing priorities between your personal career goals, your work team goals, your business goals, your family goals, your marriage goals, your social goals, your community goals. You know, high achievers want to have a participant in all those things. And of course, we all operate with the same constraints of time. There are only so many hours. And so the competing priorities is a reality for both men and women, certainly. However, you know, the another reality is that in most cases, not all cases, that it's when these are really intensely competitive goals and something has to give, it's in a family situation, it's the woman who usually has to be more intentional in their decisions about their careers and their families, that both get taken care of in the way they want both to be taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the question isn't, can women have it all? The question is, can women have it all at the same time?
Mm.
Okay.
Do you have an answer to that? We're all on the edge of our seat.
Well, it's and I think the answer is very personal.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't a right answer here. Clearly, women have done, you know, some women, well, let's talk about Sheryl Sandberg. And I was shocked, I have to mention, I was shocked to see the news that her husband suddenly died.
Mm.
Did you see that in the news?
No, anyway. I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, at 47 years old, he just died.
Oh, my goodness.
Saturday morning. Yeah, yeah. So Sheryl Sandberg, she leaned in, she talks about this as well, and actually she uses the term that is more of a jungle gym for women, too. She's been able to do it, but then also, you know, we all know that I saw somewhere that, you know, last year, as CEO of Facebook, she made $7 million. Now, they can afford pay for all of the resources and childcare arrangements that they could possibly need and want.
Right. Most of us don't have that. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. And certainly there are more and more dual income households where the couple decides that since her career is more on the fast track and or she's making more money, he will be the one to be the primary parent, you know, have the flexibility to be the primary parent. So, you know, that is happening as well. But still the majority of households, I would say, is still the woman who has to be more intentional about the decision about managing career and the family responsibilities at the same time. And I find, and let me just say that talking about jungle gyms, you know, you see more and more today at the playgrounds at 4:30, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, more fathers with the children on the playground.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Than mothers with the kids. Yeah. So
mm-hmm.
change is happening, but I think it is also in large part generational change.
Yeah. Let me just jump in here real quick. So your book, Pivot Points, Five Decisions Every Successful Leader Must Make, you went into briefly earlier what those five decisions are. They're the launch decision, turning point decision, tipping point decision, recommitment decision, and letting go decision. But what are the characteristics of a pivotal decision?
Okay, I get that question often. And my answer is, and this I don't mean to sound vague, but anyone who has made a pivotal decision, I think this will resonate for them. And that is that saying, you'll know it,
yeah.
You'll feel it when you make it. Okay. It's
mm-hmm.
For especially the launching decision. It might be, you know, the decision to launch a company. Okay, the turning point decision that you're making a commitment, that extraordinary commitment to figuring something out, or the tipping point decision, you're taking an extraordinary risk that you know. Because you have this sense of there are all these rational pros and cons of
mm-hmm.
doing it, but you feel it inside. You know you have to do it.
Well, you say you even talk about though that there are five common characteristics of a pivotal decisions of leadership. One, for example, is they will hold themselves accountable.
Yes. That unlike, you know, being a wanderer about ideas, ideas come and go in your mind,
mm-hmm.
that there comes this thought, I have to do this. And instead of thinking about it and saying, well, you know, one of these days, you're driven, you're compelled to go and do something, put it into action. And oftentimes that means going out there and finding resources, going out there and talking with people and bouncing the idea off of people. But you're compelled to actually be in action with it, to find
mm-hmm.
out more. How can I do this? Go on. Were you going to say something?
Well, you say, yeah, that they did that in essence. When they held themselves accountable, they did not do it alone, but they took full accountability for making a decision and making that decision work, that it was up to them. So that's one example you describe as a characteristic of a pivotal decision for a leader.
Yes.
Ownership. Yeah, taking ownership. Another one, you say there was a moment of truth when making a solitary decision, that each confronted himself, and these were those that you interviewed for your book, each confronted himself to answer the questions, will I really, can I, should I? What do you mean by that?
Well, with big ideas, there's always the question, there is no right answer. You know that the chances for success and the chances for setback or failure could basically 50-50 maybe, and that it will require a lot of work to get it done. So there always is the question, the self-questioning of, do I really take this on? Can I really take this on?
Mm-hmm.
And should I? Oftentimes, you know, these are not a decision you can make totally independently. If you're married, oftentimes, and this is a big risk, this is a family discussion. You need to get the support of your spouse, and sometimes, you know, your kids too, to understand that, you know, this is going to take a lot of my energy and time.
Right. And you say, in essence, that they understood that the decision boiled down to its essence was one of being true to self.
And I'll just give you this little story, what I mean by that. Mm-hmm. For me, for example, is writing this book. You know, I went through the I, should I? You know, it's going to be a lot of work. It's going to take time away from my consulting.
Mm-hmm.
This is my first book. I don't even know what's involved in writing a book, getting it published, et cetera. But I had that inner voice where it was the moment of truth. And I have to do this. What else? Or else at the end of the long day of life, I will look back and ask myself, you always thought about writing a book, but you never tried.
Right. And you know. So there you did. So, yeah, you learned, you made a pivotal point to write the book in your career.
Yes.
Talked about the impassioned inner voice. That was another one of the common characteristics of a pivotal decision, is listening to that inner voice. You also said that these leaders expanded their belief in the power of one person and increasingly believed in the magic that many people working together could create. That's something you alluded to earlier in our discussion, that it's kind of just something that's bigger than themselves. They realized that when they made that decision.
Yes, and that's all taking ownership of the responsibility, the accountability, that you learn, I can't do it all myself. There are people who can do certain aspects better than me, and I want to make this the best that it can be. So I am enrolling people to come on this journey with me.
Mm.
And that's leadership.
Yeah. And then
on that journey, you're empowering other people to learn and grow and fulfill their dreams and goals.
Yeah. So it is bigger than yourself. You're doing this. You have this passion. You know what you're doing, but you also want to engage others and help. As you're growing, help them grow. And all of you are in it together. And then finally, the other characteristics of the pivotal decision in leadership is work becomes the source of renewable energy. I love that because I know what that feels like when you're doing something and you're just so into it and you're driven and it just energizes you. So it's kind of, I guess, what in my interpretation of that is you're doing something and you can't believe you're getting a paycheck for it.
Well, right, exactly. But it's hard work. And the point mm-hmm. is, it's hard work. Yet, it's different from the hard work of we probably all, if you've been around long enough, as I have, had a job sometime where it's really hard work and it depletes you of energy and it doesn't refuel you.
Mm-hmm.
But this, what we're talking about, is something where it's hard work and it absolutely, you expend a lot of energy. Yet, the more you do, the more you want to do. You get refueled by the work itself and the mm-hmm. results you are able to produce.
So I'm going to take my final short break. When we come back, we're going to get a little bit deeper into as many of those five pivotal decisions that every leader should make right after this very short break.
Hi, this is Steve Gibb, the host of Thriving Entrepreneur. You can listen to us Tuesdays, noon Eastern, on the EWN Radio Network. I want you to know you are uniquely brilliant, created for a purpose. The world needs you, and we want to help. Listen to me and my guest Tuesdays, noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, on the EWN Radio Network as we help you learn how you can be a thriving entrepreneur.
Welcome back to Close Up with Phyllis Smith.
And welcome back into our final segment of Close Up. Yes, I'm Phyllis Smith. My guest today is Julia Tang Peters. She is the author of a book called Pivot Points. It's a new book. It's her first book. Five decisions every successful leader must make. Julia, this has been really interesting and eye-opening to talking to you. The difference between men and women and the journey they take, and that's what leadership is, as you describe. It's a journey. It evolves. It evolves based on these, you know, and what you've learned. Five pivotal decisions. And what's interesting, too, is you say that pivotal decisions come out of previous pivotal decisions. So, right. Almost, you know, it's like a branch of a tree. You know, you start with you've got your roots, and then it just builds and grows from there. I just want to, if we could dive a little bit deeper, again, the five pivotal decisions that you learned in your interviews with these five great leaders, who come from five different areas, five different industries. The first, you say, is the launch decision. Tell us again what that is, and how do we know we're in it?
Okay. Well, hopefully you know you're in it because you've made that conscious decision. I love this work. And I want to develop mastery skills in this and become an expert at it. You know, and it may not be even your second or third job. It could be one of the leaders in my book, Bud Frankel. It was his fifth job where he decided this is what I'm going to really develop, commit my life, my career to. And for Bud, the launch decision came this way. He was working for a small firm, an entrepreneurial firm, and he had an idea how to do it better, presented it to his boss, and his boss said, interesting idea, but no, I don't want to work that hard. Mm-hmm. It'll take too much work. And instantly, Bud, who believes in working hard, instantly he decided, I'm going to go do this myself. And he went out, and after, it was actually difficult for him. He had lots of naysayers, but he found a partner to go in business with him and started Franco & Company, and it became the largest independently owned marketing service agency in the country, and he ultimately sold it very lucratively to one of the four global networks in marketing communications. Okay. So for him, you know, that was a he knew, I'm making a commitment to do this. I'm going to do it myself.
So give us an example of a turning point decision.
Okay, so this is a great example from Glenn Tolman's story. He was at 34, 35 years old, CEO of a technology company. This was in the during the internet, the growth of the internet stage in the late 90s. He took this tech firm that was e-prescription meds prescription company to IPO in 1998. And because that was the internet bubble, the stock zoomed all the way up to $86 a share. And then the bubble burst, and the stock plummeted to $1.60 a share. Imagine that. Now, anyone else would say, oh, that was horrible timing. I'm never doing that again, right?
Right.
And just retrench in what they're going to take on and for the rest of their career. Not Glenn. He went out there and he talked with his customers who were physicians and found out he had the wrong product and the wrong market at the wrong time and totally reinvented the company. Okay, so it became a electronic healthcare records, a pioneer in electronic healthcare records, and is today a $1.5 billion company. Okay,
wow.
So his turning point decision saw a huge problem. It was caught in a huge problem as well, but made the decision to turn it around, and he did.
And create a bold new direction. The third tipping point, the third one, a pivotal decision is a tipping point, which involves significant risk, breaks through a fundamental barrier. How about an example of that?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to give you an example. Steve Jobs is a great example here. He's not in my book, but everyone knows what Steve Jobs did. So, you know, I believe that Steve Jobs' tipping point decision was when the iPhone was launched, he declared that he would not allow apps on the phone because, you know, Steve Jobs wanted to control everything about his products. And so he did not want other people developing apps for the iPhone. However, he came to see that he needed those apps. Other apps, which he couldn't single-handedly have Apple develop, other apps would enhance the iPhone functionality and usage for people. So 11 months later, he reversed his decision and said that the iPhone would be open to apps developed by developers. That's when the iPhone became wildly successful. Okay, so Steve Jobs, at that tipping point decision, broke through an internal barrier, which was he wanted to control everything. He made the decision, okay, I'm not going to control all of this. That was huge for Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
And sure enough, that's when the iPhone became a wild success. Yeah.
Yeah. And subsequently, every other product after that.
Right.
The fourth pivotal decision, the recommitment decision. Yeah. Focuses on purpose-driven leadership and sharpens the vision, moving the goalposts further out. One example of that.
Al Golan, one of the leaders in the book, great story. He had been at this for several decades, and then a British company bought his public relations firm, Golan Harris. And the British firm, the CFO, was kept at it and improving the margins. He just all he cared about was increasing the margins, and did not care about the work or the culture or, you know, how to treat employees. And Al, who is all about having his success, was based on his belief that happy employees make happy clients. So after several years of feeling beat by the CFO, beat down for increasing margins at the expense of having happy employees make happy clients, Al finally, he stood up. There was an incident that was the straw that broke the camel's back, and he flew to London, met with the CEO, and said, "He goes where I go. Our company's success is based on our happy clients because of our happy employees, and it is all going down the drain because we're so focused on the numbers. The culture I've spent my entire life building is going down the drain, and I can't watch this happen any longer." And so that was Al's recommitment. He had considered retiring and just, you know, walking away from it all. But he decided it was his baby. He was going to take one last stand. CEO was smart enough to know that what Al said was true, and that if Al left, clients would walk too. And so the CFO was gone. And Al then, after that recommitment decision, he knew what he stood for. His purpose was building out this culture as the company needed to go global, because it was the time when multinationals, growth for all companies was by going global. And so as he took the Golan Harris internationally, it's now in like 45 countries, he absolutely was focused on making sure that the Golan Harris culture at headquarters was developed in all of the global offices, so that it was one culture and succeeded.
He was true to himself, wasn't he?
Yes,
and we have
yes.
finally, and we're running out of time, briefly, the letting go and the final fifth pivotal decision in every leader must make to be a successful leader, the letting go decision, which facilitates new sustainable leadership. So, you know, letting go of what you built and creating new sustainable leadership. Can you give us an example of that?
Yeah, a perfect example comes from Dale Dawson, who's in the book. He was a very successful investment banker at Stephens, which is the firm that took Walmart public. So a very major firm. And while he was heading up the investment banking division, he, all along the way, he believed in empowering people and giving people the tools for them to grow as leaders and make their own decisions. Okay, so he did that all along the way. And he reached a point where he said, you know, there really wasn't very much for him to do. He could have stayed in his job. It would have been an easy job to stay in because he had this great team that he had developed and empowered, you know. And they were all leading. And so he found that, no, he had more to do somewhere else. There wasn't, he had done everything he could do there. He had lost his passionate energy for going to the office every day in investment banking. And he knew he had the successors there to carry on. And so he left, actually, with the purpose of renewing his passion, finding his passion again. And to his
surprise, quickly, what did he do? We're running out of time. What did he do?
He founded Bridge to Rwanda. He works on economic development in Rwanda.
Beautiful. Okay, listen, I'm sorry. We can go on forever. This is a book written by Julia Tang Peters, Pivot Points, Five Decisions Every Successful Leader Must Make. Julia, thank you so much for your time today. It's a really enlightening book and one that every leader and leader wannabe should read. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Phyllis.